Welcome to another flash edition of Musonomics, supported by Luminate. In New York, I'm Larry Miller from the Music Business Program at NYU Steinhardt.
And I'm Lynn Gonzalez, partner at the law firm of Granderson Day Roche. It's actually my one-year anniversary there.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
All right, Lynn, on this episode, we have AI fraud, Anthropic case dismissed, another AI case. Spotify wins its lawsuit brought by 8 Mile Style. Also, Taylor's endorsement, music and presidential politics, and Kendrick spikes. Lynn, over to you.
All right, so let's start with this AI streaming fraud news. So the U.S. Department of Justice has indicted a North Carolina musician named Michael Smith because he used AI music, allegedly, to generate over $10 million in royalty payouts to himself. This is a criminal matter. It's the first criminal case in the country in connection with this sort of streaming fraud, and the guy faces up to 20 years in prison for wire fraud and money laundering. From what I read online, it seems like Michael was a legit musician with access to like a normal-sized catalog of music, but it wasn't enough to generate the kind of payouts he was looking for, so he created like hundreds of thousands of songs using AI, and then he used fake accounts and many, many, many bots to stream the songs billions of times on major DSPs. At one point, he was raking in over $100,000 a month from streaming, and it was over like 600,000 tracks streamed a day.
Yeah, and then there's the bit in the story about Boomy, a company we've been watching since Alex Mitchell, the co-founder and CEO, started that business, 6 or so years ago. We've known Alex since his previous company, AudioKite. It was a music research company, eventually sold to Reverb Nation. Boomy and Alex Mitchell denied any association with Smith House Music Publishing, which this musician, Mike Smith, allegedly used to collect fraudulent income on the songs that were uploaded. Anyway, according to the Billboard story by Kristen Robinson, most AI CEOs practice yet another acronym, KYC, or Know Your Customer, and that is, when a prospective client shows up at the front door of an AI company and they want to take delivery on a gigantic number of songs, it needs to pass the sniff test. It might be that streaming fraud or potential streaming fraud could be indicated. In this case, would appear to be a failure of KYC. You know, streaming fraud lowers the available music royalty pool paid out to legitimate music creators. So this is a growing problem, and hopefully not like the tip of a gigantic iceberg sitting out there on the horizon. And Lynn, we have another AI litigation story this week.
Yeah, I mean, lots of litigation going on. This Anthropic case specifically hinges on the use of unlicensed copyrighted lyrics as training data for AI models. Concord and the other publishers specifically allege that Anthropic trained its service, which is like ChatGPT, but also creates creative content on these copyrighted works. The suit alleges claims related to copyright infringement, unjust infringement, violation of the DMCA, conversion, misappropriation. It's a whole plethora of claims. Anthropic, however, has filed this motion to dismiss all of the claims except those that relate to basically direct infringement, which is the charge that Anthropic wants to defend against by claiming fair use under an exemption to copyright law. This is obviously a decision that would set a real precedent for how AI training is regulated, and I am kind of aligned with Anthropic in wanting to see that fair use exemption be litigated and decided.
Well, I think everybody wants to see it litigated and decided, but do we think that using music and lyrics that are protected by copyright without a license to train an AI that becomes a commercial enterprise ought to be allowed as fair use?
And that is the question, Larry. That is what we all want to hear. That's the big issue that is underpinning all of this. I mean, I guess my point is to say I want that issue decided more than I want to hear the issue of like unjust enrichment decided. Like I'd rather they focus on this fundamental matter that affects all of these AI services.
We certainly want to see the issue decided. I think I'm going a step further in saying we don't want a fair use exemption, or at least I don't want a fair use exemption for training AIs without a license. It will dramatically weaken the music industry's ability to extract money from these guys as AIs become a more generally used music creation tool.
You know, Larry, I can see kind of both sides of that argument. I don't want to see new technology stifled because they're unable to test the waters and develop technology, but I also very much respect copyrights and want to protect our creatives.
And there's yet another old litigation that was decided this week.
Yeah, Eminem's publisher, which is obviously named 8 Mile Style, sued Spotify claiming that they never got a license to use hundreds of Eminem songs on the service. This case started way back in 2019, which is actually a year after the Music Modernization Act was implemented to create blanket licenses for streamers to pay for publishing. But the alleged infringement had been going on for much longer, predated that by far. One of the publisher's allegations in this case was that the Music Modernization Act was unconstitutional and that it violated due process and the company's copyrights. Those questions were not decided in this case. The judge actually suggested that the arguments were made just to angle for a bigger payout. The judge seemed to focus on the fact that 8 Mile Style never sent a single cease and desist or notified Spotify of the possible infringement over the years. So basically, they were barred from making these claims at summary judgment based on estoppel. They were stopped from making these claims because they hadn't done anything to protect their rights along the way.
No paper trail.
No paper trail. The judge seemed really annoyed and said the suit was manufactured to get the most gain. And they kind of acknowledged that Spotify was a bit messy with their rights clearances early on. But the publisher knew the songs were being streamed and did nothing to stop it. The judge's position was they did that in order to build a rich case. Specifically, the judge said, and I quote, 8 Mile Style chose to do nothing about the infringement for no apparent reason other than being the victim of infringement pays better than being an ordinary licensor.
Ouch.
Ouch. Beyond that, the judge said that Spotify wouldn't have even been liable for damages even if they had lost the case because, you know, after the MMA, Spotify had been paying Cobalt for these rights and Cobalt had been accepting the payments. So any claim for damages would have been made against Cobalt and not Spotify. So that's the end of it.
Wow. I guess it ends in a shoulder shrug.
Well, I mean, the point is, if you see somebody that's wronging you, take steps to stop it rather than sitting back and waiting to collect a big pot of money at the end, you know?
There you go. Lynn, I think there was a big music industry endorsement this week.
There was. There was one cat lady, a specific cat lady. Oh, Taylor Swift. Yeah. She endorsed Kamala Harris for president shortly after the debate. I think this is actually going to be super meaningful. Taylor has lots of very engaged young fans over which she exerts lots of influence. Many of these fans are going to be first-time voters. So I think the biggest impact she can make is that she can grow the voting pool and get new voters to register, likely as Democrats based on the endorsement and her politics. And that could have legs for the Democratic Party far beyond this election. I also think the timing of this endorsement is great in that it comes like just after the debate. So it seems like she really considered both sides and, you know, weighed her choices. Plus, I don't know if you know this, but Taylor was born and raised in Pennsylvania, and she was there until she left to pursue music. So I love that at the end of the endorsement, she included a voter registration link, and the voter registration deadline ends in just about a month. So she's given her young fans plenty of time to register in a critical state where this could really make a huge difference. What do you think, Larry?
Well, look, like most things in Taylor land, this was well considered and perfectly executed. But, you know, let's go back in time. Taylor was under some pressure during the latter part of the first 10 years or so of her career to make political endorsements. She didn't do it in 2016. In 2018, Taylor endorsed the former Democratic Tennessee governor, Phil Breedson, in a Senate race against Marsha Blackburn. He lost that race, but Taylor went on to endorse Joe Biden in 2020 on the night of the VP debate when she tweeted, "Gonna be watching and supporting Kamala Harris by yelling at the TV a lot." So I don't think it was a question of whether she'd endorse Kamala, but when. Taylor's politics are well understood by the fans at this point. And her tone, if you look at her Instagram post on debate night, really was even-handed, but her politics are clear, and in a magazine interview, she said that the change we need most, and this is several years ago, not just this week, that the change we need most is to elect a president who recognizes that people of color deserve to feel safe and represented, that women deserve the right to choose what happens to their bodies, and that the LGBTQIA plus community deserves to be acknowledged and included. Now, that does not sound to me like somebody who is going to consider voting for a Republican candidate or endorsing one in the modern world. And back here on Earth, a modest bump of, say, 10,000 Taylor-influenced registrations and votes can influence the election in any swing state. But I wonder if her influence at this point is mostly baked in. I mean, 283 million followers on Instagram alone is a lot. And it may be that the fans who live in Taylor land already know and understand and appreciate and may even agree with her political choices. But hey, the Trump team has Kid Rock on speed dial, and he has 1 million followers. Ted Nugent has 612,000, so there's that. And also, just this week, Jack and Meg White sued to stop the Trump campaign from using Seven Nation Army, which they had synced into a video. Now, there are aspects of this that are kind of same old to me. And in fact, back in 2016, we did an episode, Music in the Time of Politics. And it was a kind of a deep dive on the long history of music used in presidential campaigns, going all the way back to George Washington, up through FDR, Ronald Reagan, to Obama and beyond. And the thing is, unauthorized use of music by a campaign in a live event is difficult to prosecute under the law unless a licensee can bring a successful Lanham Act claim of implied endorsement and willfully intending to confuse consumers or voters. The Trump campaign has claimed fair use, and in more recent years, including this one, ABBA, Sia, Lorde, Lionel Richie haven't been happy about Trump using their music. We were just talking about the Isaac Hayes estate having been able to force the Trump campaign to stop using Hold On, I'm Coming, which the campaign used in a video. And the thing is, when you use music in a video, that actually requires a sync license. No fair use on that one. And the same with Jack and Meg White, who really are truly pissed off. We are updating right now that 2016 show, and it'll be back in your Musonomics feed next week.
That's perfect timing, Larry, really.
We do what we can.
Presidential politics are a big game, but speaking of another big game,
Kendrick is headlining the Super Bowl halftime show for the first time, produced by Apple and Roc Nation. And you may remember seeing Kendrick, among others, in Dr. Dre's Super Bowl halftime cavalcade in 2022. Lynn, can you translate this for us? Is this Kendrick's mic drop on the Drake beef? You know, what's going on here?
I mean, it does seem like Kendrick's big as a Super Bowl right now, and this does seem like the final nail in the Drake beef coffin, or at least an extra nail in the Drake beef coffin. I was surprised by this pick, to be honest. The fact that Kendrick was on that stage just 3 years ago, and that Kendrick is having such a big year, but in large part off of like a beef, this seems like a weird pick to highlight at the Super Bowl for me. And being in New Orleans, I was really hoping to see Lil Wayne take that stage. I've had the chance to see Lil Wayne perform recently, and he was great. I know there's been, you know, some history with him not necessarily putting on the best shows, but I've really enjoyed his performances and would have liked to see him take that stage. But this is a huge moment for Kendrick. He's definitely deserving of the look. I'm just surprised that it happened in this year and maybe not, you know, when the Super Bowl moves to LA or something like that. Controversial take.
It is a big look and it is a big audience. And so whether somebody is up to speed on Kendrick, Drake, or anybody else, they will certainly become more familiar with Kendrick's music in the beginning of February.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a controversial pick, but I think it's a big win for Kendrick. I'm sure he'll do an amazing show, and I'm looking forward to watching it.
And that's it. And really, that's enough for this week. A lot happened this week.
It's more than enough going on, Larry. More than enough going on in the industry.
From the Music Business Program at NYU Steinhardt, I'm Larry Miller.
And from Granderson Desrochers, I'm Lynn Gonzalez. Thanks for having me again.
This Musonomics podcast was executive produced by Lars Murray, technical production by Isaac Gaines. And if you like what you heard, please share the episode with a friend. And be sure to follow us wherever you get your pods so that you don't ever miss a new or old episode. And while you're at it, please give us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Pods. It really helps us. Once again, thanks to Luminate for their support on this episode. See you next time.